Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high atop the milkpacking district in the hearts of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News. A one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from here, from there, from everywhere. My name is Big Jim Willig, alongside my lovely assistant. Actually, the lovely assistant too. Queen of the Week, Dawn Taylor, who is, even as I speak these words to you, see, I can kiss ass with the best of them, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
Occupy Portland protesters decide what their next move will be. A man is beaten and robbed near a Sophie Island pumpkin patch. And President Obama says, hey, we don't need to run attack ads. We'll just run the crap they said in the debate.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed. Pay heed why? Because this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, November 11th, 2011. Yes, 11-11-11. Also, a big happy birthday to Mr. Big Jim Willick.
Thank you very much. I have the happy birthday cake fixed to my microphone so that all who come near within eyesight will know that this is the day that I was squatted forth by my my mother bits.
Squatted forth by your mother bits.
And every year that I use that term, my mom just she yearns for death.
So
she
proud.
She's like, why couldn't you have a nice heroin addiction like your sister? No, he wants to be a comedian, duck on the radio.
God, well,
you know what I need to give birth to more? Mutes. Need more mutes.
Occupy Portland protesters were split on their next move after Mayor Sam Adams delivered a deadline of Sunday morning for campers to leave the downtown encampments. I still hear music. Why do I still hear music? Am I having a stroke?
No.
Why am I hearing music? What the hell?
Well, you are having a stroke, but that is not why you're hearing music.
Why do I smell colors?
I wonder what the color blue tastes like.
A statement.
Bobo knows.
A statement released Thursday said the movement will continue, but did not specify where or if the protesters would move out of the camps peacefully. I'm not faulting organizers, Adams said at a press conference yesterday, but events have conspired to the point now that we have to act. Protesters split into groups yesterday afternoon to discuss what the tone of their protest would be leading up to the mayor's deadline and what they should do after the eviction. Several hundred protesters then packed Terry Shrunk Plaza to discuss those issues Thursday night at a General Assembly meeting. Some of the demonstrators seemed willing to break up the camp, but others welcomed a clash with police. I think there will definitely be some people who stay to get arrested, said Jordan Ledoux.
What else are you going to do?
With Occupy Portland. I don't know that it will be a whole lot. I'll be here, he said. I don't know if by here he means not getting arrested or here someplace else. I don't know.
Here in the perceived dimension of time and space.
Wherever Justin Ledoux goes, there he is. The city increased outreach to the group as the deadline approached. Portland police officers handed out mental health brochures to occupants at the camp. Homeless advocates were also sharing information about shelter options. Members of the movement took to Twitter early Friday morning to call for a mass cleanup of the parks overnight to prove they can keep them safe and sanitary. By the way, in a related story, the Portland City Parks Bureau is preparing to clean the parks and said that the initial damage estimates are around $19,000.
Yeesh.
So they're going to fence off the park so that the workers can clean up the grounds.
Well, we could have the homeless, kind of wander around and pick up the refuse. So, I mean, thus giving them something to do. Because here's the thing, I would feel horrible if... if the whole protest worked and the government, both local and federal, decided to give in to the people's demands as their voice would be too loud to ignore. And so everyone's just like, yay, let's go back to our nice warm homes with non-leaky roofs and insulation and warmth. And I can go back to work tomorrow and continue to drive past these same 16 people that I've been living with for the past month and not give them money or help them out in any way. So things worked out great for us, not so much for Boxcar and Shoestring that regaled us with their harmonica skills and their doo-wop ability around this burn barrel.
Who taught us how to, like, make hobo stew in a bucket.
Oh, you need a coffee maker? And half a top ramen packet, and what do you? The world's your oyster.
Apparently, they're pirates. They're homeless pirates.
Homeless, but well, yes, once you're on land, you're kind of homeless. The sea is my home.
I'm just going to continue on with the.
I think that'd be best.
Thank you, R. If you, by the way, if you are in Boston and you're interested in occupying Harvard Yard.
No, it's Harvard Yard.
Harvard Yard.
What are you, retarded?
You need to have a valid university ID. The first night of the...
How do you like them apples?
First night of the Occupy Harvard protest became something of a private event Wednesday when campus police temporarily limited access to Harvard Yard exclusively to those with school ID cards. According to the Boston Globe, several hundred protesters were locked out of the gated yard when they tried to re-enter following an earlier rally near the Harvard Law School. Inside the yard, student protesters erected tents, at least 20 of them. The Globe reports about 200 students attended the suddenly exclusive protest, setting up tents in front of the university's main administrative building. A Harvard dean attempted to convince the group to move their tents to a less prominent location.
Wow.
But the students said, we're protesting here, and the whole point of protesting is for you to, like, actually see us do it.
Well, I think that ultimately what just happened in Boston was what parents have been doing for years. Find something obnoxious that your kids are doing. You do it, too, and instantly they lose all interest in it whatsoever.
Nicandro G.L. Iannacci.
You're making that up.
You think I... It actually looks like a name that is written as an anagram.
Or a bad Scrabble hand.
Expressed the students' frustrations over the locked gates to the Harvard Crimson, saying, "I think it's absurd. Do we really need 8 guards per gate?" This is Harvard. I've got... For its part, the university cited safety concerns as the reason for the temporary shutdown of the pedestrian-heavy campus space. Wednesday's demonstration wasn't Harvard students' first foray into the Occupy movement. A group previously staged a walkout of a popular economics class to protest what they saw as biased teachings, and others have participated in the ongoing protests in and around Boston. Harvard students are focusing their occupation on the practices and culture of their institution, lamenting the corporatization of higher education epitomized by Harvard University, according to a press release. Their main areas of concern are the university's investments and the pay of the school service workers. The Globe points out that the protest was explicitly timed to coincide with the university's negotiations with the local service workers union.
Yeah, this is from the same university that every year brings us keggers for kids. Where it's $3 all you can drink. Delta House throws its wicked bash, and you should get a couple kegs of like Keystone Light or Natty Ice.
And then they graduate, yeah, and go into the workforce, and they become the corporate oppressors.
Yes,
because they're going to Harvard.
Yeah, kind of like the forest for the trees on that
one. You know, they aren't like graduating from Harvard and then going to work at the free clinic.
Yeah, or Peace Corps.
Anyway, Thursday was also a tough one for Occupy Wall Street movement, the Occupy Wall Street movement, with 2 unrelated fatal shootings at 2 different encampments, raising concerns about the safety of the ongoing demonstrations. Police are currently investigating both incidents. One was a shooting just outside Occupy Oakland, and there was an apparent suicide in Occupy Burlington in Vermont.
Wow.
But the incidents have already sparked the latest round of debates between the protesters, who have shown no signs of giving up their lengthy protests, and local officials who are hoping to bring an end to the encampments that they say are dangerous. In Oakland, where the city's relationship with protesters has been strained, to say the least... City officials
only during football season.
City officials and protesters reacted immediately to the shooting, the Associated Press reported. The protesters claim the attack is unrelated to their encampment, but Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan contends that the incident underscores a reason why the encampment must end. Shake Anderson, a camp organizer who often serves as a spokesperson for
his
the group.
His first name is Shake. Does he have a buddy named Nugs?
He told the AP.
Two of them follow fish around?
He didn't recognize the man who was shot and therefore didn't believe he could be a protester. Meanwhile, in Burlington, a 35-year-old man died after being shot in a tent at the local occupying encampment. The shooting happened a little after 2 p.m. and was apparently self-inflicted. The man was a military veteran and was taken to a city hospital in grave condition and later died from his wounds. So,
I mean, the Harvard thing, I almost kind of see that as how things should have went. It should have been, well, it's kind of a catch-22. You don't want it to be an elitist affair, because that kind of flies in the face of the whole idea of protesting. But at the same time, when it is that open and that available, people will take advantage of that, like the bike thefts here in Portland and various other criminals that, like, they see the protest as just a huge crowd that they can easily disappear into and can help shoulder the responsibility should they get caught.
There's that. Also, it's just pleasant to be around like-minded people who have similarly poor haircuts and bad hygiene.
Yeah.
Makes you feel like you're part
of the
tribe.
Dude, you wear hemp necklaces too? That's awesome, bro. You want to hear some of my poetry?
So, my favorite headline of the day so far. Headline: naked man captured up a tree in nut orchard.
I'm trying to be the bigger man in all this, and it is not working.
You're making fuzzy noises. Sorry. Dateline Salem. Police said they captured a naked man in a filbert orchard early yesterday after several 911 reports of public indecency. The caller said the man was on Duck Inn Road, south of Jervis, and then he ran into an adjacent orchard. They said he was touching himself as people drove by. A K-9 team tracked the suspect into the orchard, where he climbed up into a tree wearing only tennis shoes, according to Don Thompson of the Marion County Sheriff's Office. Stephen James Ellingsworth, 28, of Silverton, who also goes by the last name Frolov.
Frolov?
Yes, sometimes his last name is Ellingsworth. Sometimes, apparently, it's Frolov.
Is he a vampire hunter?
Yeah. He was taken into custody and provided a warm blanket because of the early morning 30-degree temperatures. Investigators said Frolov told him he had been out drinking with friends the night before and didn't know how he got to Duck Inn Road.
I would imagine he was drinking nutmeg. Thank you very much.
He was booked into the Marion County Jail on 3 counts of public indecency. A bail was set at $15,000. Once again, my opportunity to read the headline: naked man captured up a tree in nut orchard. Thank you, Salem.
Salem, it's like our little Florida.
It is.
You know, there's so many things that happen in Salem that you're just like, really, that happened in, wait, where did it happen in Oregon? Salem?
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, a man was beaten and robbed before being cut on the forehead near a Sovie Island pumpkin patch this morning. Just before 9 a.m., deputies were called to a report of a robbery by Knife Point on Northwest Gillihan Road in the area of Bella Farms and the Pumpkin Patch. There apparently it's the pumpkin patch. The pumpkin patch. According to Lieutenant Steve Alexander with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, he said the suspect kicked and punched the victim to the ground, asked him for cash and his ID. The victim gave him about $50 cash, and his Oregon ID card. The suspect then took out a Leatherman-style knife and slashed the victim's face. The victim had a 3 to 4 inch large scratch on his forehead.
It's a rough life, Charlie Brown.
The suspect left on foot. He was described as 5'9", 170 pounds, with short, dark brown hair. He was wearing a black hooded jacket and cargo pants.
Wait a minute.
Jim Willig.
Hey.
He had no facial hair. Oh, okay. He had no facial hair.
Thank you.
Or outstanding scars, marks, or tattoos. And he spoke with an Eastern European accent.
Well, that could have been anyone.
Maybe it was Frolov.
Frolov the vampire hunter. Frolov the pumpkin hunter.
Frolov was already in custody when this happened.
Yeah, the great pumpkin sounds like a dick.
Yeah. So President Obama told a group of Hispanic journalists today that his reelection campaign could win over Latino voters just by showing them clips from Republican debates. Obama, as reported by Univision, said, "I don't think it requires us to go negative in the sense of running a bunch of ads that are false or character assassinations. It will be based on facts. We may just run clips of the Republican debates verbatim. We won't even comment on them. We'll just run those in a loop on Univision and Telemundo, and people can make up their own minds."
See, Obama's got the power. Why doesn't he just, bring back Joel Hodgson and the bots, and they can just sort of sit there and critique the all the footage from the debates, And, I mean, that would get, I don't know, at least a good three-quarters of the country's vote.
I love, though, the Democratic understanding, though, that seriously, that's all you should have to do.
Yeah.
Is say, okay, you know those debates you didn't watch because you didn't think you really cared about what the Republicans were saying? This is the crap they're saying. Seriously? Someone's going to vote for this?
This is how much they...
That's all they got to do. Just show it to you.
They obviously don't feel like these debates are important enough to, memorize the talking points that they're going to discuss.
The On Politics blog reports that the Obama campaign, I believe that's part of Slate, reports that Obama's campaign is using Wednesday's Republican debate to raise funds. In his interview with a Hispanic journalist, Obama was particularly critical of Republicans' immigration policy. From the Univision website, and this
I believe
is,
it's Univision.
Is it Univision? I'm an American. I say
You're American.
From the Univision website. Now
very,
I'm making it
very
French.
Yes, Univision.
President Obama said he is confident in his ability to win over Latino voters before next year's elections, thanks to some added help from his Republican opponents. During a roundtable with Hispanic media in the White House's Roosevelt Room, Obama outlined his strategy for winning over a Latino electorate that remains supportive of him, but less enthusiastically so than 2008. The president said he'll contrast his record with those of the Republican candidates on hot-button issues ranging from immigration to the economy and health care.
What about the energy bill? What about the...
Department of Energy. Don't forget the Department of Energy. No.
So often overlooked.
Rick Perry and Mitt Romney in the GOP debates
should have been gone.
Angrily sparred over illegal immigration, and Herman Cain suggested during a speech that an electrified fence should be built between the U.S. and Mexico to keep out undocumented immigrants.
Well, when you think of rational, level-headed activity, you think Cain. That just leaps to mind.
Well, and here's the thing about Cain. Shall we move on to talking about Cain?
Ooh, could we?
Yeah. He was caught on tape yesterday joking about Anita Hill.
Oh, man.
That, of course, being the college professor who filed sexual harassment allegations against Clarence Thomas in the 1990s.
In an exchange, another uptight broad.
An exchange between Cain and a supporter was caught on camera by Fox News at a campaign stop in Michigan last night, where it aired on Fox News. A member of the crowd mentions Anita Hill to Cain, who then responds, "Is she going to endorse me?" And then there was a hearty round of laughter from those in the room, including Cain. The New York Times reached out to Cain's spokesman, J.D. Gordon, who offered what has become a typical response from Cain's camp. "It was a joke," Gordon said, adding that Cain was simply repeating what a supporter said.
Mm.
This came one day after Cain apologized for calling House Speaker Nancy Pelosi Princess Nancy during Wednesday's GOP debate, and follows previous jokes, yes, about electrifying the fence between the U.S.-Mexican border. So,
should electrify the fence between the ladies and the men's room in the Senate. You know, it just... I don't know. And the sad thing is, the spin doctors just have this incredible way of just, well, finding, like, a different perspective. Like, well, you know... At least I acknowledged her. You know, I didn't just ignore. I respect women's rights.
Mr. Cain did not make the initial joke himself.
No, God.
He was responding to something someone else said. So therefore, he's not responsible at all for the things that came out of his mouth.
And the fact that he is repeating it means that he listens to his constituency, even when they fly in the face of his platform.
Right.
See?
He may have disagreed with what they were saying, but he listens to the people.
God, I need a shower after that. Yeah.
Well, an elderly Amish man in Steubenville, Ohio...
I'm already loving this story.
...was attacked by his own son, who a sheriff said cut the man's hair and beard in a latest incident in a breakaway Amish community. The victim told the sheriff he was scared and upset, but wouldn't press charges.
Of course not.
Sheriff Fred Abdallah said, "I'm frustrated with it, I'm upset with it, and here again, the man doesn't want to file charges because of his belief." Abdallah warned the son in advance that he didn't want trouble, and he parked nearby during the father-son reunion, which was the first in several years. The sheriff said the elderly man was attacked Wednesday while visiting his son in the breakaway Amish community that's home to five suspects charged in an earlier beard-cutting attack.
I'm sorry, it's not funny.
Well,
it's funny.
The Amish believe that the Bible instructs women to let their hair grow long and the men to grow beards and to stop shaving once they marry. apparently there is this this small group of crazy Amish extremists in Steubenville, Ohio, who are attacking the other Amish men and cutting off their beards.
Yeah, as if this is it's the only beard you're going to get. There's Zebekiah. You know, if that, if you lose this beard, we can't get you another one.
So the man who was in his 70s went to his son's home, and I guess to try to talk to him about, son, could you maybe stop with the crazy beard cutting? Because it's upsetting people. And the man said his son then attacked him with the help of the son's children and wrestled the elderly man to the ground. The elderly man's wife tried to help her husband but was held back by her daughter-in-law. And then they cut the man's hair and beard. So Abdallah said the beard cutting incidents are related to Sam.
Did they frost his tips?
The beard cutting incidents are related to the leader of the breakaway Amish group,
yeah,
whose name is.
I know.
Mullet. Sam Mullet.
Sam Mullet.
Sam Mullet.
Party in the front, revenge in the rear.
The group has had differences with other bishops over the handling of church matters, and Abdallah said the son of the latest victim is married to Mullet's daughter. Mullet told the Associated Press last month that the haircutting was a response to criticism of his leadership from other Amish bishops. All right, Patrick is drinking my Vizo, and that is unacceptable.
Shave his beard. Shave his beard. Do it. Do it.
Mullet said they changed the rulings of our church here, and they're trying to force their way down our throat. What?
You know.
Make us do like they want us to do, and we're not going to do that. So, while it's uncommon for the Amish to take disputes public and enlist authorities, there is no central authority to decide, so it usually falls to the church leaders or those involved. And, of course, this is frustrating to local law enforcement because they really don't want, like, people just, you know, holding down 70-year-old men and cutting their beards off, because that's not nice.
You know, in situations like this where there's a dispute in amongst the Amish community, which are very passive-aggressive, they're not pacifists, they're very... they're pacifists. They don't believe in physical altercation or confrontation. But in situations like this where something desperately needs to be done, I feel the responsibility falls on Harrison Ford.
Well, yeah.
I think he needs to...
Action Grandpa needs to get himself back to Amish country.
Yeah.
And leer at ladies in showers and put on the hat.
She wasn't in a shower. She was sponge bathing.
Oh, that's right. She was taking a lovely sponge bath.
Yeah. I was in that movie.
That's right.
That's right. I was in that movie.
I forgot about that.
The Amish. I grew up around or near the Amish.
Let me guess. Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
For those playing the drinking game at home, that is our first mention of Pennsylvania today.
You're going to get blotto. Growing up around the Amish... my parents in school, they try to teach us to accept them and everything else. But the funny thing is, we tried very hard to be like to befriend them and to speak to them. They didn't want to have anything to do with us whatsoever. I went to a lot of flea markets, as is the want in Pennsylvania. A lot of swap meets, a lot of craft based flea market type things. There was one in particular that I used to go to called the Green Dragon every Friday, and you could go and. They would have huge expo centers filled with, like, quilts and vegetables and all kinds of wares that the Amish would make, furniture. And, of course, there would be a couple of tents set up where the crazy lady with the crystals and the dragon, and they'd be there. And I would always go off to the Army surplus tent where I could get my nunchucks and my ninja stars, and the guy there would totally turn a blind eye to be selling all these weapons to a kid that was, like, maybe 13 or 14. But what my friends and I used to do, and this is horrible looking back, but still kind of funny, is we would go and we would practice hitting on women by making the Amish girls feel woefully uncomfortable.
Oh.
By going over to them and just like, so, it's a nice quilt you got there. What is that? Was that a drop stitch? How do you do that? That's incredible. And they would get very uncomfortable and they want to leave. And we would do that ceaselessly. Because this was our primitive form of entertainment. Now, granted, if they were like just if they would just blow us off or you know emasculate us like all the other women that we knew, we would totally have left them alone. But like if you're gonna make yourself a target, sooner or later,
so you were sexually harassing and bullying Amish girls.
Not bullying. You make it sound like we were like you know pushing them.
You knew they weren't gonna. Tell you to piss off.
Rumspringa comes to all Amish, both men and women. They have that opportunity when they want to jump ship. They have that window opens. I'm just saying out there that should they if they want to jump ship for a little while, I got a Chevy van. They we can go to the craft store together.
Oh, my God. You just told a story about sexually harassing Amish girls.
I wouldn't call it harassing.
Really?
We weren't catcalling them. You know, like, hey, beard chin, what's going on? Because some of them were homely. You know, so I thought it more as flattering.
You know, you'd look great in a dress with zippers. I'm just saying.
And they just make the sign of the cross and throw holy water at us. So yeah, that's why I left Pennsylvania.
Oh God.
That's reference number two.
Let's do science.
Please God, something else the Amish can't do.
That's right. I guess. All right. Well. For many people around the world, today's date holds special meaning.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Jim Willig's birthday.
You're right. And for those of you with a day off today, you are welcome.
Also, it is 11-11-11. Many people believe today is especially auspicious or significant, and apparently there's an increase in weddings that are scheduled for today.
Hmm.
But that is not just weddings. Egypt's Antiquities Authority closed the largest of the Giza pyramids on Friday, following rumors that groups would try to hold spiritual ceremonies at the site at 11:11 a.m. this morning on November 11, 2011. The authority's head, Mustafa Amin, said the statement Friday, the pyramid of Khufu, known as Cheops, would be closed to visitors until Saturday morning for necessary maintenance. The closure follows a string of unconfirmed reports in local media that unidentified groups would try to hold Jewish or Masonic rites on the site to take advantage of the mysterious powers coming from the pyramid on 11-11-11.
But that's, I mean, are the pyramids running on local time?
Pyramids?
Are they running on, like, you know, Pacific Standard?
The pyramids operate on a special mystical power that only our ancient space brothers understand. We, our simple monkey brains, are still too primitive to understand the power of the pyramids.
Fair enough.
At least according to a whole lot of books I read back when I used to take stimulants.
It's 3 a.m. I should go to the library.
There are several reasons why people see significance in numbers. For one thing, it's an event. Many Hollywood studios like to premiere their films on memorable dates to capitalize the public interest. There's even a new supernatural horror film titled 11-11-11 set on today's date when, according to press materials, quote, an entity from another world enters the earthly realm through heaven's 11th gate.
They got 11 gates?
I guess so. Well, they might have more than 11 gates, but the 11th gate is the one that's opening today.
Hmm.
So on 12-12-12, it's going to be a whole new ball of wax.
Yeah.
That's when the puppies come.
Yeah.
That's when the house.
The puppies.
If you can make it till that far, the place is going to be overrun with puppies.
I'd be lying if I didn't think that something, kind of hoping that something miraculous would happen on today's date, you know, as it is, you know, 11-11-11 is my birthday. I was born 1976, which was a bicentennial year. And yeah, I'll be turning 35. 3 and 5 are both prime numbers.
You're now old enough to be president.
There, see? It's all kind of fallen into place. I feel like with all this, I should at least play Powerball. I think
at least
I should throw the hat into that
ring. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Much of the interest is rooted in superstition and numerology, the idea that numbers are inherently lucky, such as 7, or unlucky, like 13. Numbers are, of course, artificial and man-made, and they have no more or less significance than humans give them. Still, numerology has been around for millennia.
I will shave your head.
And is impressed today by millions of New Agers and others. When we look at a digital clock at 12:34 in the afternoon, we are likely to notice the numerical sequence 1, 2, 3, 4,
mm-hmm.
because it's an unusual time, and most people wouldn't regularly happen to glance at the clock at exactly the time we remember and notice it. But if we look at the clock any of the other 1,438 minutes of the day, nothing's particularly unusual. So that kind
of, but when I look at the clock and it's 43:21, you know, I always make a note of it in my numerology journal.
The irony is that people who are approaching today with some kind of hope that it's, like, amazing because it's, like, all ones are not taking into consideration that the actual date for today is 11-11-2-0-11. So,
why
you know.
Why must you hate
the current year
everything?
Is not 11, but 2011.
Okay.
So,
you ready for me to blow your mind? Ready for me to blow your mind?
Okay.
How many ones are in the number 2?
None.
But you take two ones, those two ones fill up that 2-0 space. See what I'm saying?
Oh, I see what you got.
So if you take was it 1408, the Stephen King book? If you add up all the numbers, you get 13. which was his little sly way of doing that. So I'm just saying that you just want to walk in here and dismiss my day of pagan magic.
As far as I'm concerned, Jim, every day with you is a day of pagan magic.
Thank you. See, yes. You always know what to say.
In recent years, scientists have learned that some patients believed to be in a vegetative state actually have some awareness and that they might be able to communicate. Now, a new study suggests a portable brain monitor can detect signs of this, perhaps making it possible someday for doctors to easily double-check the diagnosis at the bedside. Researchers used an EEG machine to examine brain waves and found that 3 of 16 vegetative patients could understand what they heard and follow instructions. EEG machines are far more common and less expensive than the large functional MRI scanners that have shown awareness in some vegetative patients in previous studies, so they could be set up in a patient's room, avoiding logistical problems that make it dangerous or impossible to have a vegetative patient scanned in an MRI facility. Damian Cruz of the University of Western Ontario in Canada said, "We can take this assessment out of into the community to the patients. We can go to that bedside and find out what level of awareness they still have." And I just, that's all well and good, but I got to say, it's actually kind of on the depressing side. I had a grandmother who had a stroke and was sort of in and out of sort of a sleeping state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
She would sometimes be kind of lucid, but most of the time she was just sort of asleep. And I would go visit her, and sometimes I would talk to her, and I'd feel, and she would squeeze my hand. And there's nothing more terrifying to me. I mean, literally nothing more terrifying to me than the idea of having a stroke or having something happen to me where I am laying there in bed and I am aware of what's going on around me, and I can't move or speak.
Yeah.
So it's like, yay, we'll get to find out if these people are actually aware of what's going on around them while they're trapped in their hell.
Yeah.
Yay! Yay, medicine!
Well, the Metallica video won, which was based on the book Johnny Get Your Gun.
Yes.
And also, there was an episode, I believe it was possibly like Ray Bradbury Theater, or I don't think it was The Twilight Zone, but there was an episode about a guy who was involved in an automobile accident, and that was the situation where, for all practical purposes, people thought that his vital signs were so low and that he was unresponsive, that he was dead, and that he thought that he was going to be put through an autopsy. And so it's him kind of inside his own head screaming, trying to get something to respond so that people would realize that he was, in fact, not dead or that he was there. But that is a terrible fear.
As I mentioned already this week, I had taken a certain recreational chemical substance when I saw the movie Serpent in the Rainbow, which has a scene with Bill Pullman being paralyzed by the voodoo drugs and then being put in a coffin and being buried alive and not being able to move or speak. And that is a terrifying, terrifying concept to me. So
yeah, the whole idea of like claustrophobia, I don't have an issue with. Like, I know if I'm in like a small enclosed space, it's a little uncomfortable for a bit, but I don't start to freak out. The idea, though, that I would just be like a waking or a living consciousness is, I think it's a different level of terror, as opposed to just kind of like having your arms held at your side or anything else like that. Even if you can just kind of wiggle and grunt, that at least would give you some solace, as opposed to just kind of being like thought waves and everything else, and having to be taken care of hand and foot. I think ultimately would be just that is truly a terror.
Calling back to our numerological date today story, listener. Third prize, you're fired, in the text box, says I'm a buzzkill. And also, in response to your thing about the ones and the twos, says, so back on 11-2-11, it was the same day?
Yes.
Speaking about blowing your mind.
One of the powers of today is that you will be able to time travel or interdimensionally travel.
Thank God.
To that time. Can you imagine what we could do if we could go back to 11-11, the year 11-11?
Oh, I thought if I could go back to 11-2. I was trying to think of what was going on like 9 days ago that I could like fix.
Oh, back when things were great?
Back in the
when the economy was fantastic?
Back in the good old days of 9 days ago.
When you could fly and no one had to patch it down, or you had to have like your internal organs scanned.
Life was so good. I was so much prettier 9 days ago.
You were a knockout.
I... God. The world was my oyster 9 days ago.
Yeah.
Now, nowadays.
Look what you did with it, Dawn. Look what you. The absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Also in the text box, Melkev would like to say, happy birthday, Jim. You rock.
Thank you.
3 exclamation points.
Wow.
And cheers.
I weigh every statement on the number of exclamation points. I use them so frequently. Anyone that has actually studied English and proper punctuation must be maddened anytime I send them a text message or a Facebook message because of my overusage of exclamation points. At one point, I actually even put in a message, I'm sorry, I just went to Costco and bought a big box of exclamation points. If I don't use them now, I'm going to be stuck with them forever.
And regarding the time travel thing, Third Prize for Fire response says that it's good to know. Good to know, Jim. See you on 11-2011.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, besides inciting the occasional bout of road rage, traffic jams may have other harmful effects on the brain. A growing body of research on traffic pollution and the brain has shown there's more to it than we think. One Wall Street Journal article on the topic points out that scientists are taking a two-pronged approach by looking at public health studies as well as experiments in the lab. Association studies are finding links between higher exposure of pollution and certain cognitive problems. Researchers such as Columbia University's Frederica Pereira are discovering that pollution's imprint can begin before birth, as newborns with higher exposures show permanent genetic differences from other babies. Coupled with findings that kids exposed to higher rates of pollution perform worse in intelligence and emotional tests, raises questions about how pregnant women and children can reduce their exposure to environmental pollution. In one experiment, Pereira asked pregnant women in Poland to carry around air monitors in order to collect data about the quality of air that they were breathing. She tracked their children after birth and found those with higher exposures lagged behind developmentally. Other measurements show that older women exposed to higher levels of particulate matter had a higher chance of developing neurodegenerative problems like Alzheimer's disease. In the United States, where industry emits more particulate matter than vehicles at times, it's hard to tease out these other sources of emissions, but for the most part, there's a relationship between local traffic and exposure, and that's become apparent by studying mice as well. Scientists now suspect that this particulate matter, which is a mixture of droplets, acids, dusts, metals that are in the air primarily from car pollution and yes, from factories.
Progress.
Maybe a large component of the problem. At the present, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency states particles smaller than 10 micrometers in diameter are especially dangerous since they can move beyond the nose and throat into the lungs and therefore the brain. It's been established that being exposed to particulate matter influences a person's chance of developing respiratory and heart problems, but pinning down trends for the brain has been difficult because most researchers have had to measure the effects indirectly. So even then, it's hard to exclude other factors that might be in play. But the idea that pollution has negative effects on the health is obvious, but researchers are still only beginning to explore the range of potential effects on development and cognition in the long term.
So, live in a bubble. Mm-hmm. Never go outside. Never interact with other people. Never cut your beard. Never cut your hair.
No.
Grow your own fruits and vegetables.
Right. Don't pay any attention to the date or the time, because there's no significance to that whatsoever, because numbers are a man-made construct.
Well, let's not go crazy, Don. Come on now. Let's keep it in the realm of the possible here. People
That's
need
all
something
the science.
To cling to.
That's all our science. We're done with science
done
for today.
Done with science. Putting a fork in it.
Done. You going to close us out with a little music there? No? Hey!
I don't know if I was reluctant to play the sounder. I was
because of the gee noise? Or
well, there's that, too, yeah. You know, I don't know if we would be thrown into a paradox where we would have to restart the science on the March news and then read it again and again and again throughout.
Anything is possible on 11-11-11.
Damn Skippy.
Okay, so that's all your science. So, a Winter Haven, Florida woman was arrested yesterday
where?
Morning. Winter Haven, Florida. It's in the cold part. It's in the it's in the tundra area of Florida. You're not on this show. Stop talking. Patrick's sitting over here off mic. Like, if you want to be on the show, you have to put on headphones and sit at the microphone like a grown up. All right, and don't drink my Visa.
You just got called on the carpet.
So a Winter Haven, Florida woman was arrested yesterday morning after she boarded a school bus full of students, caused a scene, and hit the driver. According to police, around 6:05 a.m., 37-year-old Marcia Emanuel flagged down the school bus on Renton Manor for an unknown reason. The driver, recognizing her as the parent of a student who rides the bus, stopped and opened the door to talk to her. The driver told police that she then got on the bus, and when the driver told her she wasn't allowed on the bus while there were students on board, she started yelling at the driver in a foreign language while hitting her on the shoulder and arm. When officers arrived at the scene...
Thank you for informing me of this information. I am a better person for knowing so.
When officers arrived at the scene, they were able to track Emmanuel down to her home, where she was uncooperative, ranting and yelling.
Strangely enough.
And at one point pulled her underpants down.
See, I think that all of this is just a misinterpretation. She said she was speaking a foreign language, something
yes.
that she didn't understand. Well, perhaps in this culture, presenting one's posterior is a form of apology.
A sign of respect.
Yeah, I am a butthead. See, here is my butt.
I am. It's like when a dog rolls over on its back to show you that it is cute and adorable and trusts you to not disembowel it. It's the same thing. You pull down your underpants and say, "Hello, Mr. Police Officer. I trust you not to anally probe me with your nightstick while we were having this conversation."
See, again,
it's an elaborate form of the handshake.
I think that that people jumped the gun in Florida, that it was inappropriate of them to arrest this poor woman, who clearly is trying to just make her way in a world foreign to her.
She only knows the way of her people.
Exactly.
Anyway, she was
the butt slappers.
She was arrested and taken to jail, and also. They don't give any details about this, but apparently also a 15-year-old was also arrested for causing a disturbance on the bus and being uncooperative while officers were trying to investigate the incident. I couldn't tell you nothing about that underpants, lady.
It's a shame. You showed me the picture of the mugshot.
Yeah.
Previous, and if we had access to the website,
right.
Inner Sanctum, those keys were taken with Mr. Emerson on
right.
his tour of Bloodlust.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our visual aids are all put up by Rick as part of his MacBook's Mobile Me thing, and so we can't actually share the show thing. But if you do go look for Florida News and look for. A story titled "Woman Beats School Bus Driver, comma Drops Pants at Officers." You will see a hilarious mugshot of a woman who looks
delightfully surprised,
completely shocked and surprised that she has been arrested and is having her photograph taken.
See,
like it just suddenly happened at that moment.
The picture is what leads me to believe that this is merely her people's form of.
I did nothing wrong.
Yeah. I gave her the apologetic slap to the face and shoulders, and then I presented my vulnerable spot to you as a way of saying I was in the wrong.
I offered the fist punching of respect.
Yeah.
What more can I do?
Really? Just crack a book, people. Think outside the world in which you live.
Well, the search for Wilson Ramos continued Friday in a story that we have not been covering, and that's entirely my fault. I should
Way
have been
go.
Covering this. As Venezuelan authorities express confidence they can quickly solve the case of the kidnapped Washington Nationals catcher. Ramos had just finished a highly promising rookie season as starting catcher for the Washington Nationals, was kidnapped from his family home in Venezuela. Earlier in the week, the Washington Post reported that Ramos was in his native country for the winter in order to play a handful of games with the Aragua Tigers, a Venezuelan winter league team. And on Wednesday night, kidnappers drove past his family home twice while he and his family sat inside. Then they stopped, forced Ramos into their 4x4 vehicle at gunpoint, and drove off. The family hasn't heard from the kidnappers. The Venezuelan authorities have confirmed that he's still alive. They're Kidnapping in Venezuela has traditionally been a financial affair, so it's not necessarily reasonable to expect any harm to come to him. Meanwhile, the Major League Baseball and the Nationals have issued a statement saying their foremost concern is with him and his family, and their thoughts were with him. The Associated Press has reported that Deputy Justice Minister Edward Rojas of Venezuela told state-run media on Friday that investigators are continuing to gather evidence and that they've obtained physical descriptions of Ramos's abductors from his relatives who witnessed the kidnapping, and that police are working around the clock to solve the case. Meanwhile, at Venezuela baseball games played on Thursday, players observed a minute of silence and prayed for him. So...
And here we can't get our basketball teams and coaches
to not rape you. Thank you, Patrick. We could just ask them to stop raping.
Yeah. What's with all the rape? Come on. Let's just bring it back here. It's just a game, people. But yeah, in Venezuela, if you've got a contract issue, apparently stuff gets real, really quick. So with any luck...
Think of how easily we could have brought Michael Jordan's salary down if you could just send some guys over and just take him at gunpoint.
I don't know.
Back in the day.
Yeah. I don't know if you... Back in the day, I don't think you could. I think the magic of Jordan would have been such that...
I don't know. Maybe holding him or his family at gunpoint, you know, while maybe trying to negotiate a more reasonable salary. I'm just saying... It could have been done.
Well, I think,
but we don't do that here.
Well, with the benefit of hindsight, now let us go speak with the Kobe Bryant people, mm-hmm. and sort of encourage, maybe get James Gandolfini, who isn't doing anything currently.
Yeah.
He could be new NBA, go between the coaches and the players.
Sort of the salary liaison, if
exactly.
you will.
Exactly.
Let's do our entertainment news.
You got it. Here's your entertainment news. For this November 11th, 2011.
Well, you'll remember that that little musical on Broadway called Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark.
You mean the last great musical this country has produced?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, we've got a few updates on that since we haven't talked about that in a while. Director Julie Taymor filed a lawsuit Tuesday against the producers, alleging they violated her creative rights and haven't compensated her for the work she put into Broadway's most expensive musical. Charles Spada, attorney who filed the lawsuit on behalf of her, said Tuesday in a statement that the producers' actions have left her no choice but to resort to legal recourse to protect her rights. In the wake of this lawsuit, lead producers Michael Cole and Jeremiah Harris have released the following statement. Since Ms. Taymor's departure in March, we have repeatedly tried to resolve these issues. The production has indeed compensated Ms. Taymor for his contribution as a co-book writer. Fortunately, the court system will provide once and for all an opportunity to resolve this dispute. We look forward to a resolution in which everyone is properly compensated for their contribution to Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark. Meanwhile, just when it seems
across the city.
It seems like they've just ironed out all of the problems since opening last spring. Somebody else has gotten injured. Michael James Thomas, the actor who plays both Peter Parker and... Well, the actor who plays both Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Whoa, what?
Oh, I'm sorry, spoilers, lol.
Thank you, really?
He was hospitalized Wednesday following a backstage accident during a matinee performance. According to Newsday, Thomas sustained the unspecified injury near the beginning of Spider-Man's second act during a scene transition, grounding the play to a halt for 10 minutes. He was subsequently taken to a nearby hospital where he received stitches. Reeve Carney, who originated the role and performs them six times a week, filled in for Thomas for the remainder of the show. Rick Miramontes...
He's more of a Venom man himself.
A publicist for Spider-Man: Turn Off the Dark, confirmed the incident...
It sounds like a Jewish-themed superhero. Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Without divulging details of what happened, Matthew James Thomas sustained a minor injury while off stage during Wednesday's matinee performance. He's fine and will be back in the show for his next scheduled performance on Saturday.
I just like to think of Stan Lee kind of like crawling around the rafters, loosening sandbags, and doing all he can to bring this this musical to a grisly end.
Well, just to bring you up to date, the $65 million production has had a few...
Million.
Has had a few setbacks. A stunt man broke both his wrists.
Smacking himself in the head. What was I thinking?
Two actresses suffered concussions. A Spider-Man double suffered severe injuries when he plummeted more than 20 feet in a fall, although he has made a full recovery and is back on the show. Many new safety guidelines were put into place, particularly after union people started going, we might not work on your show anymore if you're gonna have actors continue to, like, I don't know, hook up their own safety restraints and then fall 20 feet to the ground.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, somebody wants to let me know in the text box, Jordan did not make a high salary from the NBA. He made money from his sponsors.
Yeah.
The NBA, I think they only paid him like minimum wage.
Scale.
I think he was only bringing in, what, $12,000 a year NBA? It wasn't a ridiculous amount of money, I'm sure.
Paid by the basket, which is why he had to work harder to be a better player.
You know, they should do that.
Totally. Oh. Like, if you make a three-point shot, That's $20.
That's why in his spare time, he had to take that job at Starbucks.
Yeah.
To cover the rest of his expenses.
He was a hard-working player, Don.
The Obama administration has announced $60 million in additional funding to fight AIDS transmission in sub-Saharan Africa and a new special envoy to raise global awareness about the deadly disease, Ellen DeGeneres. Secretary of State Hillary...
Oh, I thought that she was the issue that they
need
to raise awareness. There's this chick named Ellen DeGeneres. Stay away from her.
Secretary of State Hillary... you're not on this show. Secretary of State...
You're pretty when you're quiet.
Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton says the actress will bring her sharp wit and her big heart and her impressive TV audience and 8 million followers on Twitter to support U.S. efforts to save the lives of those suffering from HIV and AIDS. Clinton says the money will help scale up and assess new prevention strategies. She said Tuesday that more effective prevention methods were driving infections down, making it possible to treat more people. She says allowing health campaigners for the first time to get ahead of the pandemic and make progress toward establishing an AIDS-free generation. Well, it looks like Chelsea Handler is single again.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Everyone. Handler's reps have confirmed that the author slash comedian slash late night talk show host has split from her hotelier boyfriend, Andre Balazs. Handler, who previously dated her former boss, NBC Universal chairman Ted Harbert, was linked to rapper 50 Cent.
Thank you.
She told Piers Morgan during an interview back in May that she had very strong feelings for Balazs, who she'd reportedly dated for less than a year. The newly single Handler tweeted, along with a picture on Tuesday, "Me and my sissies, always good to be good to the women in your life. Sissies forever."
I don't know what that...
I have no sissies? Idea what that means. I don't know if she's
saying... Is it like a shorter version of sisters, perhaps?
Is that what we call our gay best friends now? Our sissies?
No.
No?
I think that's derogatory.
I would think so, but Chelsea Handler said it, not me. Damn you, Chelsea Handler.
Damn you to hell.
Dylan Walsh is a father yet again.
Isn't he the guy from 90210? That's Brandon Walsh.
That was Brandon Walsh.
Excuse me.
Walsh, I think, is the guy from Nip Tuck. I don't know. He's in a movie called Unforgettable, and he told People that he welcomed a daughter named Amelie Bell 6 weeks ago. He said, "The best moment of 2011 would definitely be the birth of my daughter on September 25th. Hey, that was my birthday. Not a whole lot of sleep happening in my apartment. He has three other children from two previous..." So he's just getting around to telling people he had a kid.
Yes.
Were they worried it wouldn't take?
That actor you've not heard of has had yet another child.
In a story that really is not worth talking about in any way whatsoever, they announced who's going to host the Oscars.
Yeah, I saw...
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, you know...
Moving right along.
You know, here's the thing. I don't know if anything specifically happened to kind of, you know, make it popular to just not like Billy Crystal. He just kind of dissolved like a fart in a car.
I like Billy Crystal, and Billy Crystal's career has had some ups and downs. He's made some just horrible crap, but he's made some really terrific and classic, you know, comedy films. He himself, when he was at the height of his Oscar power, you know, the first couple of Oscars that he hosted were great.
Yeah.
His opening numbers and the stuff he did were great. They were innovative and they were cool. It was something we'd never seen before then. But honestly, it's like, this just seems so lazy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's
first
like,
of all,
we got a problem. Who do we go? Who's our go-to?
It's as we've got this moronic problem. First of all, here's the thing. Oh, we'll talk about this. How about we talk about this in the next hour?
Well.
I have so many opinions on this, and it is such a stupid thing to have opinions on. Because who freaking cares? I mean, the Oscars are ultimately...
There are a few bedridden Americans who are incapable of changing the channel that are waiting with bated breath to see what Billy Crystal's going to do.
Well, I have to get to this very important last entertainment story. Selena Gomez is concerned because her new dog needs surgery.
Oh, my God.
She has a
puppy.
Where
are you when we need you, Ellen DeGeneres?
She has a puppy named Baylor. And she sadly tweeted, "My baby is sick, sad face, praying for his surgery." And she attached a picture of her puppy lying down. No word on what's wrong with the dog, who Selena adopted just weeks ago from Darcy's Animal Rescue Center in Winnipeg, Canada. Justin Bieber, her boyfriend, was along with her for that trip. although he has said that the husky mix pup is not his. It belongs to a friend. I guess he was talking about her. Selena picked the lucky dog after hours of looking around the shelter. And now, yes, Selena Gomez's puppy needs surgery.
Yeah, but Selena Gomez has the kind of FU money where she can take some high-profile doctor off of much-needed cancer research and throw him at this minor bloat issue of a dog you've owned less, you know, you've owned it for 2 weeks.
Right.
If it were a cell phone, you wouldn't even have been able to figure out all the functions yet.
That doesn't mean she doesn't love her dog. Is
Serena Gomez capable of love, I think? She's going out with a pair of bangs with Chuck Converse All-Stars.
If the children who are born and bred in the Disney Entertainment compound are not capable
they're
of
not
love...
They're not born, they're hatched, but then, I understand.
Then which of us are, Jim Willink? Which of us are?
I wish I had an answer for that, and sadly I don't.
Well, let's close out our show with a not... Oh, are we done?
No.
Okay. I thought we had a couple minutes left.
We do, but I just trying to pull myself together after that Selena Gomez.
I know it.
Is it Selena?
Selena.
Selena, okay.
Yeah, Selena Gomez.
I don't know why I'm caring this much about getting the name right of this person who really is a non-entity in my world.
Yeah. So here we go. This will be our... We'll close on this story because I love these kinds of stories.
Okay.
Police have arrested 19 suspects after fooling them into joining officers by promising free beer if they called them up on the phone. In an undercover operation, Derbyshire, England police sent letters to dozens of people who had evaded arrest for several months. They were asked to call a marketing company to collect a free case of beer.
Sweet.
A total of 19 suspects fell for the hoax and called the number, which put them straight through to the Chesterfield police station. A time and date was arranged for the free beer to be delivered, but instead the suspects were arrested. The sting formed part of Operation Rocky, a campaign covering serious crime, which is running across Derbyshire until the end of November.
Getting thirsty now.
Chief Inspector Graham McLaughlin, who led the operation, said, "These suspects are people who have managed to evade arrest for some time, so we've used different tactics to find them. It has been very cost-effective, as it can take a lot of time and money to track people down. We use a lot of variety of methods to arrest those suspected of committing criminal offenses, and we will continue to use those new tactics when necessary. Those arrested are alleged to have committed offenses including burglary, robbery, and serious sexual assault."
Here's the thing. If they're having so much success with the whole free beer campaign, and I'll be honest, I probably would fall for the same ploy myself, the concept of free beer. I've done some really stupid things under the guise of maybe getting some free suds. How about instead of wasting all the time, money, and resources using stuff like, I don't know, detective work, gathering of evidence, and just start with the free beer offer and see what fish that net can garner.
Yeah, why not? Just do that. Because I love the stories. Because we have these every couple of months, you know, where it's like, if you show up at a certain time, you'll get you'll get free tickets to a football game.
Yeah.
You could win a sailboat. And these guys all just like troop into the expo center. And like 300 guys just show up. They lock the door behind them and say, "Surprise, you're all under arrest."
You're like, "Well, that's not fair at all." Yes,
you
fooled me. I've lived a life of scum and villainy. I deserve this free widescreen TV with matching, you know, season tickets to the Seattle Seahawks. Did they mention the brand of beer?
No, there were pictures of the cops standing and grinning next to cases of beer, but they were like British beer. I don't know my English beer.
Like Elsinore or something from Strange Brew.
Priest's Snot or something. They have things like that.
Is it more of an amber or a port?
Pope's Nose Ale.
And on that, on the Pope's Snot, we will bring to a close this episode of Legion of News. We will return after a brief musical interlude with today's episode of the Rick Emerson Show, sans Rick Emerson. We have not heard from Rick, so there is no word as to whether or not Rick has been fallen victim to monkeypox or anything along those lines. Either way, Legion of News comes to you from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk is the always hungry Don Taylor. Not always hungry. I had those kind of I just go with whatever's right in front of me. At the news desk, Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler, and our chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Like I said, please stay with us after a brief musical interlude, and we will continue on with the Rick Emerson Show. Thank you very much for listening. We will return next week with yet another episode of Legion of News. Until then, please stay tuned.